Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts. Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where? Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's genius.
It's genius.
That's a good start to this Friday show. We are sometimes, after, you know, a beer or a drink or two, we're sometimes genius. I don't know.
Yeah.
See. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Where we try,
we try
so hard. There's that coat. Oh, we were talking about the coat before we turned the microphone.
Have you not? Did you just now see it?
Yeah,
I was telling everyone. Those of you, welcome YouTube. Those of you who are joining us on the live stream will see that I'm wearing one of the very. It's rare for me to break down and buy a thing that I saw on Instagram, but I saw this puffy coat on Instagram, and it was so cute and cozy. And it's really cold today, and it has backpack straps. So that I don't have to wear it, I can just carry it.
Oh, my God. I've never seen anything dorkier. So do you, like, fold it up and
does
it turn into a back, or do you, like, wear it around like a cape?
You just wear it around, just hangs off the back, but it's so much better than tying it around your waist.
Fair enough.
Pink and fuzzy. Those of you who are not in the YouTube stream will definitely be here next week because you're missing out.
Oh, man. Too funny. Too funny.
Backpack.
Okay. I'm Kai. She's Molly. It's Friday.
Because it's a really big coat. Hello, everyone. I'm Molly. It's Friday. It's Economics on Tap. The live stream is rolling. It's been a long week. As I tweeted, I know that thank God it's Friday is a bit of a cliche, but today I really, really mean it.
Yeah.
So much so that I'm bringing back the glass of tequila.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Just like tequila rocks?
Just straight up tequila and rocks. Anejo.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only 3:30 out here, peeps.
I'm
doing
did
my standard
you or
beer.
Did you not?
I got a
Come
beer.
On.
What?
Kai
no, I
told
got a beer.
Us that you now
Look,
I'm gonna have to. No, I'm.
That's
I'm
not what I said. I did not say I was gonna. Well, maybe I did. I don't know. You relate
I'm messaging.
The story.
Kai Dude. Said he was gonna get bourbon delivered to his house.
God,
and I said you have until it. Friday at noon, or you're gonna have to give me your address, and I'm messengering it to you. But he wouldn't share. I'm not gonna drive down there.
Fair.
I'm just gonna send drinks.
I don't think
I'm
going to
get it from the fundraising
team. I'm not sure that's
team.
Exactly what happened. All right. I will report back once I've searched my Zoom. I mean, my Slack. And
beer it is.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Anyway.
Fine.
So here we are, Friday afternoon. Molly's drinking tequila. I got a beer going. Let's do some news, shall we?
Yeah.
Mine is very high concept, by the way. So I think you should go first.
I know. I'm kind of excited about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we end on this, think? Okay, this is major.
Sure. You do the news. Mine is more thematic.
Honestly, I kind of had a hard time choosing today because I basically was like, I'm tired and I just want to go have a drink and talk about whatever. But
so let's do a podcast.
Let's do a podcast. But I was interested to see, well, I think a thing that is relevant to those of us in the biz is that Congress today held hearings. They've officially started the kind of slate of hearings that are going to hone the antitrust approach specifically to big tech going forward. And today's hearing, interestingly, was about big tech companies and their effect on news and journalism and the news business. And this, of course, is all in the wake of this Australia law that I've actually been kind of obsessed with, where Australia was like, we're going hard and you're paying for news and you're going to pay to link to publishers. And, you know, it was such a hardline approach that Facebook was like, they turned off links to anything even resembling news in Australia. Google was like, we might have to pull out, but then they ended up making their own agreement. And as expected, it's having these reverberations. This week, actually, there was a bipartisan bill introduced to try to basically let small news publishers band together and negotiate for payments from these big tech companies. Mm-hmm. And then they had this hearing today. But what I thought was so interesting is just today we had Will Oremus, who writes for 1-0, on the tech show.
Yeah, I heard him. That was a good interview.
He's great, yeah. Right? I know, yeah, he's really good. And it was just really interesting talking about antitrust. And one of the things he pointed out is that, like, this is all looming. And the Biden – look at my jacket with these little straps. This is too fun. That the Biden administration is looming – I've had one sip of tequila, guys. One sip. With this potentially quite serious antitrust enforcement in mind. And that these companies are, like, yelling at each other. Like, they have yet to wake up to the fact that they're the real enemy could be – coming right around the corner. And so sure enough, today in this hearing, Microsoft has actually supported the Australian law publicly and today said, you know, absolutely, we definitely think that you should figure out a way that news publishers should get compensated for this kind of thing. And Google's bad and Facebook is bad. And then Google came out and was like, Microsoft is doing like naked corporate butt kissing, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And they're only doing it to distract from the fact that they've been implicated in these two big hacks, the SolarWinds thing and then the Outlook thing. And they and it was like the 90s all over again with these big companies yelling at each other and antitrust enforcement actually looming. And it was just kind of dishy and fun, frankly.
I wonder if there's going to be any, oh my God, you can't mess with journalism, First Amendment pushback from anybody. Or is that not going to be a part of this, do you think?
I mean, there's been a lot of pushback, even like Tim Berners-Lee, who is essentially the inventor of the World Wide Web, said this Australia law, this idea of paying for links is truly antithetical to the way the web works. Like the whole point of the World Wide Web was to create an infrastructure where things you can link to things freely. So mm-hmm. in theory, nobody should be having to pay anybody for links. And the ultimate problem, the reason that journalism has suffered so much is because these companies have monopolies and they're able to monopolize the digital ad market. They can set the rates. They can say, we have way better data than anybody else. So you definitely want to advertise with us because we can target that lady who wants that pink fluffy coat with the backpack like this. And she will buy that sucker on Instagram after one tequila. And no one can compete with that. Just as one example. So that ultimately the real problem might be monopoly and not linking, but like a lot is changing, yes, about the web.
Okay.
It's fascinating.
Right. Interesting. I would be curious to see how this plays out because it was a big brouhaha when Australia happened. And so now we'll see what Congress does.
I'm pretty curious. Well, I think it's really interesting. And I think it's very interesting that Microsoft is like, you know, if you guys use Bing, you won't have any of these problems.
Oh, God. So, look, let me ask you this, though, and this is a subjective question. Are you hopeful that they will come to some kind of reasonable solution, or is this just going to be another, you know? I mean, look, the last time there was a legitimate law affecting the internet was, I don't know, Section 230 in 1996. I mean, when, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, I mean, there was like the one, there was SESTA FOSTA, and now I'm just going to get all wonky and nerdy. I think.
Yeah, let's not do that.
I mean, we have to reckon with the size of these platforms. And what I do think is interesting is the gatekeeper approach. Like everybody's sort of honing in on, okay, like maybe the problem isn't the news business. Maybe the problem isn't this. It's not that. It's that they're so big and they control the access to everything mm-hmm. else. And if you can solve that problem, now that is the biggest, hardest problem to solve. But if you can solve that, then you level the playing field at least a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Very quick detour into the YouTube chat. So the plants that are no longer there in Molly's she shed must have been the real plants.
That's what they're Tim all Anderson still said. Here.
I'm just
they're
saying.
All still here. It's just the angle. There we
all
go.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Also, I forgot there are four plants here and two of them are real. So only 50% are fake.
Perhaps Molly sold the plants to bankroll the jacket. All right. Anyway.
Nice. Good one.
So one super quick thought. Wait. One super quick thought on your item, and then I'm going to move on to my item. On your item, I wonder if we should stop calling these platforms and instead call them what they are, which is companies, which are out to make a profit. You know what I mean?
Because
platform kind of anodizes it. You know?
Yeah. I think that's an excellent point, actually.
Because. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Random thought.
Yeah, you're right. We wouldn't call Walmart stores.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's a retailer.
Okay. I like
it. It's whatever. Okay. Boom.
Good edit. Good
Changing
edit,
society.
Kai.
One podcast episode at a time. Huh. It's getting very dark here in Los Angeles, by the way. I think it's going to rain on me.
Oh,
okay.
Really?
So
that's
here's
why
mine.
You're kind of down. It's sunny nights. Yeah.
No, I'm not down. I actually feel pretty good. I'm just thinking big thoughts. And my big thought goes, as they often do when I think big thoughts, to history. And here's where I'm at. This Biden relief plan, $1.9 trillion, is putting the government back in this economy in a way we haven't seen in 55 years since the Great Society of Lyndon Johnson, right? Biden's getting into healthcare, he's getting into student loans, he's getting into all kinds of things that were first really done in a substantive way by Lyndon Johnson in the Great Society in 1964, 65, 66. Many programs of which, Medicare, are still with us. So I've been doing some thinking about the Great Society. And I happened on a speech last night on YouTube, which just fascinated me. In 1966, Ronald Reagan goes to New York and he gives a speech titled The Myth of the Great Society. Hmm. And a couple of things about it. Number one, Ronald Reagan is in that speech, and Tony, our everything producer, is going to put it on the show page. Reagan in this speech is 54 years old, which kind of gobsmacked me for some reason, because we always remember Reagan.
In 1966?
Yeah. 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 He turns,
wow,
he's 54, 55 years
turns
old.
Out.
Which, yeah, he was. Well, another random historical note, Joe Biden is as old now as Reagan was when he left office. Anyway.
Totally.
So Reagan goes to New York and gives this speech called The Myth of the Great Society. It runs 42-ish something minutes on YouTube. Totally fascinating, but about which two things. Number one, the partisan cherry picking, no, come on, that's not really what it's about, goes back at least 50 years, probably 250 years, but it was especially glaring in this one. And number two, just as the history guy here, Lyndon Johnson starts the Great Society in 1965, 66, all these social welfare programs. Reagan basically ends it in 81, 82, and now Biden is bringing a lot of it back. And I just think that's incredibly fascinating, really interesting, deep, deep economic impact on this society and our country and the shape of it because, and here's the payoff, once you give people something, whether it's expanded healthcare benefits a la the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, or expanded child tax credits, which is in this bill, it's really, really, really hard to take them away. And it takes decades if you want to do it. And this is a moment where I think maybe Joe Biden, who's already, as we said, 78, 79 years old, is playing the long game, you know?
Yeah.
And this is setting in motion changes or supplements to this economy that he obviously will never see. And maybe Kamala Harris, his 52-ish, whatever it is, year old vice president, may not even see either the end of. But anyway, Ronald Reagan, Myth of the Great Society. Tony's going to put it on the show page. Just watch the first 10 minutes. It's crazy, crazy interesting, even if you're not a history person.
And so I'm assuming, so the Great Society was like the big old social safety net, right? And then he was sort of saying, no, government can actually do this.
Head Start and all of that stuff. Yeah, and Reagan in 65, 66 is saying literally the things you hear people saying today. What about our freedoms? What about our liberty? And Reagan, of course, is the guy who in 1980-81 says the era of big government is over. And Joe Biden, this week, signing this bill, said, you know, that's what
think. Yeah. No, yeah. I think it's I'm totally with you. I think that this bill is going to be transformative in that it completely rolls back this idea of scarcity in a way. And or could, like we were talking about, could it be enough? Could we see what the country looks like when there's enough money in the system for things instead of not enough money, which leads us to all fight with each other? And maybe it won't be great. I'm not trying to say it will be, but, you know, I grew up just like on a personal note. My mom, her whole career was around runaway and homeless youth. And she did a lot of like grant writing for runaway and homeless youth, worked in a shelter when I was younger, and then ended up, you know, in the administrative side. So distributing, helping to write and distribute grants to organizations all over the West that were helping kids. So as you might imagine, doing this work in the late 70s, 80s, early 90s, like my childhood involved a lot of talking about Reagan, like a lot. Right. And it was so interesting because it was direct. It was like I could see the impact. You know, now we're talking about like, oh, these 40 or 50 years of Reagan did this, this, and this. Whereas like in my house, it was like Reagan does a thing and an organization goes away. Or Reagan does a thing and a grant is not funded. And it was so, I mean, I really feel like I grew up in this like very shaped by this very specific activities of this one president that are so interesting to be talking about now all these years later.
Right.
It's just really fascinating.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We are still talking about Reaganomics. We are still talking about conservatives who are of a sensible mindset, are still talking about Ronald Reagan as the beacon of their party and the shining city on the hill and all of that stuff. And I think Biden now is putting a counterpoint to that and saying, listen, that was then, this is now, and here's what this country needs after 30, Reagan left in 89, right? So 30-something years of this. Yeah. Anyway.
And I get, and that's now my, we'll see, right? We don't know. Yeah. We know where we are now.
Right.
We know where we were then. We don't know what this is going to lead to, but the amount of change you're talking about is profound. Profound.
Yeah.
Yep. Hopefully we'll still be here in 40 years.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, well, you will.
Maybe not like right here, but, you know.
I'm going to be sitting in my little shed in the rain.
What it all looks like.
Freezing my yayas off. All right. Anyway.
A puffy coat. You need a puffy coat and a bourbon, friend.
That's right. My musings and Molly's news and her puffy coat. Let us move on, shall we, Mr. Thorpe?
Let's play a game.
Oh, my goodness. Half full, half empty is what we call it. That's right. Drew Jostedt is in charge. I am ready. Begin.
Are you half full or half empty on virtual festivals and conferences?
Oh, huh.
I have
no gas in my tank for that. I'm out.
Can I split those up? I'm half empty on virtual festivals, because forget that. Like, especially if festivals, a big outdoor concert, like, that's going to be fine. I'm definitely half full on conferences, because here's what I've been thinking. Next week is virtual South by Southwest.
And
it occurred to me
the
other
day. Are you doing a panel or something?
No. It occurred to me the other day that South by Southwest, especially that show in particular, which is kind of just a big roving catch-all for like all kinds of different things, at least the tech part. I'm only talking about that, not the music and the film festival. That is literally happening all day, every day on Clubhouse right now. And I don't know why you would ever pay the kind of money that you pay to go to that event. And I'm seeing more and more people move, more companies move events to things like Clubhouse, where it's basically a panel because it's a spoken thing. And with Twitter Spaces coming out and Mark Cuban's got this fireside thing, I think that could totally be the end of conferences. And it's really interesting and kind of great.
Really?
It's kind of great. Like,
so,
I don't have to.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead and finish it.
I was just saying it's great for time. Like, if time is the most precious substance in the universe and you don't have to spend it on a plane or be at a thing at 7 a.m. when you got to get your freaking kid to school, why do they always schedule stuff at 7 a.m. at conferences? Bite me. I'm done. I'm done.
Wow. Okay. So Molly's drinking tequila this afternoon. But look, wait. And you will certainly appreciate the irony of this coming from me, introvert, and you know, you and I have been at social gatherings and I just kind of disappear and you're like, what? Where'd he go? Don't you think there's some value in-person interpersonal relationships?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I'm not saying that that will... I think, you know, we'll just go to like a tenth of the conferences or, you know, instead of just like, I'm going to bop down here for this meeting, that then instead you could have a cool offsite somewhere. I think in-person will still happen. It just might actually regain value. I mean, think about the times you have jetted across the country for one meeting and then jetted back. Yeah. And so that's like basically 4 days of either travel or recovery for one meeting or appearance. That's stupid. That's a waste of our unobtainium. Okay. Unobtainium, by the way, is what I call my time, the most precious substance in the universe.
Yep. All right, next.
All right,
Drew,
I don't even know what our answer was. Next.
The okay, next one is the Netflix password sharing crackdown.
Oh yeah, so Sabrina did a story on that on Marketplace this afternoon. So Netflix, well, we know you think Netflix is over, but do you think the password sharing crackdown might continue? Netflix has been sending notices to some people saying, hey, if you don't actually live in the same house with this person, you got to get your own account. And of course, password sharing is rampant. I pay for my passwords, so I don't care.
So yeah. I guess the question is whether I'm half full or half empty on Netflix yeah. password sharing. I don't think that's
yeah.
likely to go away, especially not since Netflix keeps raising prices. I don't actually even think that they intend to enforce it for that long, let's be real, because you know what they yeah. always cite in their earnings yeah. calls? Signups.
Yep.
Like, they want those numbers, yep. but maybe that's why, yep. is that they're like, oh, we want those numbers instead of those. I don't know. I don't think the password sharing is going to go away. And I think if they really do crack down, then people are just going to stop using it because it's kind of too expensive. Not
yeah,
going to lie.
I think that's probably true. Okay. All right.
Next.
Half full or half empty on Roblox.
You mean
I'm
the
let
stock
you take this one, and then I'm gonna
or
say,
the entertainment
say
for my niece?
Say.
I mean, I don't even know if yeah. I said that out loud right.
Oh, that's amazing. There will, yeah. I mean, Roblox has been super fun for lots of kids. It's been a lovely little platform. It is not anywhere near the, like, you know, the multiverse and the next social network that everyone says it's going to be. There will be a new Roblox soon. But it's really fun right now.
But it's worth, after its IPO, it's worth $40 billion, this company is.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, who's playing Fortnite anymore?
Yeah, you know? Well, weren't you like the Uber Fortnite user?
Yeah, it was super fun.
Is that
fun.
Dead for you now?
It's over now.
And over. Okay, sorry. I missed that memo.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm playing Tetris on my phone. That's how far I've come from, like.
And we're back to the 1980s, ladies and gentlemen. There we go. Ronald Reagan is in the White House.
So I guess Molly that was a half empty. I guess that was a half empty. Hilarious.
Right.
But the chat room, by the way, is like, we're full. We're full on Roblox, so I'm going to go with them.
Okay, what about all peanut butter Reese's cups?
You know, I saw these, and I'm opposed. Very half empty.
Yeah.
You want a damn peanut butter cup, you got to have the cup, and the cup has to be chocolate. End of discussion.
Yeah, otherwise, what's the point? It's not like everybody wants peanut
right.
butter and peanut butter. It's chocolate and peanut butter. That's the whole point.
Right. This one's
yeah,
not hard.
I'm just, I couldn't be more, I don't even understand
better.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get a spoon and take the spoon into the jar of the peanut butter, and that's...
Exactly! Like, why do I need... And then yeah. I guess I put another layer of peanut butter on top of that. Is it slightly differently flavored peanut butter? Like, that is desperation. Desperation. Yeah.
Do we have one more?
I am out of ideas as well. I am out of ideas.
All right. Drew, if all Drew right. is out of ideas, then we are all out of ideas.
That is it. Oof. For half full, half empty. It was close to off the rails. I'm not going to lie. We were...
A little bit.
We were drifting off the side of the rails a little bit there. That is also it for our show for today. We will be back next week. We remember that we're doing a time-limited podcast. It didn't seem like it, I know. But for now, please send us your questions mm-hmm. and comments. Hit us up at makemesmart@marketplace.org. Emails, voice memos, whatever you want to send. We want to hear from you. Tweets.
Please. I'm reasonably sure, by the way, that our discipline Monday through Thursday, gets us a little bit of wiggle room on a Friday afternoon.
For sure.
I'm just saying.
Are you guys mad?
You know,
do you want us to go?
Yeah, no.
I'm asking the YouTube.
Yeah, see,
they don't want us to go.
They're going to say that's fine. Yeah. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera, right now sitting there with her head in her hands. Tony Wagner does web stuff for us. Is that what we're saying now? Does, like, web producing stuff for us? Stephen Bion does video for us. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters. That's like such a 1998 thing. Erica Phillips
really
does newsletters, also our Make Me Smart explainers.
Tony Wagner operates the World Wide Web. Today's program was engineered by Drew Josta, Charlton Thorpe, Ben Tolliday, and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. The senior producer is Donna Tam. The executive director of On Demand is Tara Nieves.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.